I had too much time, I guess, to think about what I was going to share here. You know, it makes me uncomfortable speaking in front of big crowds. This is the biggest one, obviously. But, you know, I spent some time with my higher power about it, and all I got to say is if you don't like what I share, you're going to have to find a power greater than me to talk to you about it. So we're going to see what comes out. When I was asked to speak, I wasn't really that thrilled about the idea, but so I called up my sponsor, and I think I was looking for some sympathy or something. You know, I was kind of in the back of my mind thinking that maybe he'd say, just tell him you don't want to do it and get somebody else. Well, no, he didn't do that, of course. What he said was, if somebody asks you to speak, then somebody probably wants to hear what you have to share, which kind of put it in a new perspective, and, you know, that's what sponsors are for. That's what we do as sponsors. We try to put things in a perspective that addicts like me can understand. So, somebody said I should maybe start with a joke, too. I don't know. You probably already heard it, but I hadn't heard it, so I'm going to just share it with you. How many addicts does it take to screw in a light bulb?
All of them! One of them that he really wants to change.
No. One to hold the light bulb while the world revolves around them. All right. Good start. Okay. What I want to do tonight, this is what I'm going to try to do, how it works out, we'll see. I want to talk a little bit about what it was like in active addiction. I want to talk about what happened, including the little gift of desperation I happened to get one day, and what it's like in recovery for me today, with maybe including a little bit about some of the steps and what I think about them and how they worked in my life. So I'll start off with the first part here. I don't want to get too much into the active addiction part, because for me it can get into somewhat of a, you know, war stories, and for me that gets boring, and I don't like it after a while, so I'm going to try not to focus too much on that, but I do want to tell you where I came from, what got me here. Start at the beginning. I grew up in a small town in Maine. Yes, I'm a Yankee. You know, it was a real small town, but, you know, as we all know, there's drugs everywhere. I didn't have any problem starting out when I was about, you know, I think maybe a freshman in high school. Up to that point, I was a real big sports junkie. I had some natural ability. I really loved it, but, you know, I think as soon as I picked up, that was gone. I think that's the first thing I lost. I just lost interest. You know, from the first time that I used, and it was drinking, you know, I'm sorry if I say some trigger words, I'm sorry, they just may come out, but anyway, alcohol is a drug, I know. That's what I started with, you know, when I got sick, the first time I got sick, I blacked out, I couldn't wait to do it again, you know, that's it's great, let's do some more. You know, and I started, you know, like we all do, like, I was a teenager, though, and I think it was maybe 1970 when I started my little active addiction road. You know, the kind of drugs that were back then, the kind of culture there. When I look back now, it seems a little minor, but it wasn't. Drugs are drugs. It got me going, and I managed to make it through high school, which is somewhat of a miracle in its own. I used... while attending class. I mean, probably a lot of us did that, but I did it pretty heavy and managed to still make it through, and I went, you know, a couple of years to college and made it through that okay, too, but I was still using as much as I could and still get by. I got married at an early age, had a couple of kids, and, you know, I still use. I had a pretty decent job. I moved from Maine to Virginia for a company that had an office in Maine, so I was transferred down here. I had a pretty good job. I was able to do it, but every night, you know, it was mini party time for me. So, you know, that relationship didn't last. I've been married 3 times. That was the first one. Ended in divorce for various reasons. Addiction was part of it. 2 kids were brought into the world to, you know, feel the effects of addiction also. They still deal with it today. Excuse me. And so anyway, I don't want to go into a lot of that. It ended. I moved on and got into another relationship, which was a little different. It had a little more serious effect on me. I met a lady. We got along great. And it so happened that, you know, we got along real good. We were together like 4 years before we did get married. We got married also. But she came, brought to the relationship some serious resources. Let's just leave it at that. And there's nothing a drug addict would like to hear is that. She was an addict when I met her, so was I. It's a great pair. You know, we hit it off great. But an addict with unlimited resources, it's a tough one. It's fun at the time, but I'm lucky to be alive, really. But anyway, we were together for a while, and everything was great, and then it wasn't. And the main reason it wasn't was because we were both addicts, and we probably stopped growing around the time we started using. We didn't know how to have a relationship. I still didn't know how. No communication, but we used heavy. 10 to 15 years, hard drugs. We were basically bad alcoholics and cokeheads. I mean, there's no easy way to say it. And, you know, I'm sorry again for those words, but I feel it identifies where I've been. It was bad. And what happened, really, that brought it to an end was we kind of made an agreement that we would stop the hard drugs. Which was great, great idea, except she did and I didn't. So what that required was for me to lie and sneak, and because there's no way I just wasn't going to stop. And how much she knew about it, I don't know, but I did some bad stuff. I broke all the rules, broke all the wedding vows. Just, you know, kind of major insanity. And it went on for a few years before it finally came to a head, and she couldn't take it. And she wouldn't really talk to me about it, because we didn't communicate like that. It was more like anger and then revenge. And I was bound and determined I was going to be the best at revenge, and I was. I did some nasty things that I'm not proud of, you know. It's in the fourth step. I don't want to go over it again, but it was, you know, even I've thought about talking about this, and it's brought back some bad stuff. Even though I've done 2 4-steps, it's still, you know, it's still something I'm not proud of. But anyway, it ended, and the way it ended was I just couldn't take the fact that she was so angry at me for being such a dick. That I was the victim, man, for sure. I'm the victim here. I don't like this. I can't take it. She was interrupting my using. She was making it harder. So one day I said, "Well, I know what I'll do. I'll just disappear." And that's what I did. One day I just didn't come home from wherever I was. Nobody knew where I was. I shut my cell phone off. Didn't use a credit card. I knew she'd be looking for me. I went for 30 days somewhere. I just took off on a bender. And I knew what that would do. I'm pretty sure what that would do. And I was right. I eventually came back, showed back up, and there were the divorce papers and the restraining order. Perfect. So that's what addicts do, I guess. That's what I did, and I'm not proud of it, but I was deep in a black, dark place. I wasn't thinking 5 minutes ahead. It didn't matter. I was high, and that's the way I wanted to stay. It didn't matter who I hurt or how bad I hurt them. That's not a good place to be. And the person, my wife at the time, like I said, she had some resources, and they were promptly put to good use in a divorce court. And I won't go too much into that, but it was nasty, and it should have been. She had every right to do what she did. But, I spent money as fast as I could spend it. I had everything anybody could want, and it still was not enough. I had a beautiful house. I had cars, boats. It still wasn't enough. There was a hole there that I could not fill. And, I've come to believe today that it was a spiritual hole. I had no idea what it was then, but it didn't matter because I was going to still try to fill it. But she went after me, and she had every right to do that. And, I don't know if anybody's heard the term. I was spending money and hiding shit and doing all kinds of stuff that she didn't know about at the time I was doing it. But if you've ever heard the term forensic accountant, your secrets don't stay secrets. I didn't do well in that divorce. I shouldn't have. It was a nightmare. But I came out of it, and that's one person that's on my amends list that I have not been able to talk to. I haven't spoken to the person since. I think it's maybe shame. I don't know. But anyway, I moved on, and it was a bad time. And I eventually kind of regrouped and realized that I had done some bad stuff, and I probably shouldn't do that again if I got in another relationship. Even in my spaced out, drug addicted brain, I knew that what I had done there was probably something that shouldn't be repeated. I did get into another relationship with the wife, with the lady that I'm married to now. We have a good relationship today, but I pushed that one also. She is the type of person that will have my back. She is loyal. She always was. And I never stopped using. We both used. But again, not she used, but not like me. So everything was good for a few years until, my old ways came back again. I started deciding that I wanted to use more than she would be happy with. So I started hiding stuff and kind of doing what I was doing before. And I was feeling really bad about it. I saw the pattern even then. But I continued to do it. And, I don't know how I was able to hide some of the stuff I did, but maybe she just wasn't watching me close enough or whatever. But I started doing drugs that I said I wouldn't do. And one day, I'll back up a little bit. It was bad. I wanted to stop using, I was a very heavy drinker, and there was a lot of other stuff I was doing. I used to use a lot of substances together, like the cocktail type of guy I was. But I just realized that I was getting out of control, and I really wanted to stop. And it was the first time in my life that I actually realized that I'd been telling that lie to myself all those years, that if I really wanted to stop, of course I could stop. I couldn't do it. I'd get up in the morning, use all day. I didn't stop until I went to sleep. And one day I said to myself, I got to stop this. This is crazy. This is insanity. I must have had some kind of clear moment, but I'm not going to do this tomorrow. I can't do this tomorrow. This is insane. tomorrow by noon, I was doing it again. So the next day, I said to myself again, you got to try her. This is insane. Same thing happened. You know, now I know that was powerlessness. You know, our literature kind of defines one definition of powerlessness is using drugs against your will. You know, I wouldn't have agreed with that at that time, but I can see it now. That's what I was doing. So I just, after many tries on my own to stop, and never thinking about asking for help, knowing it was out there. I'd been sent to 12-step programs before as part of probation or whatever. I knew it was out there, but it never even crossed my mind. No, I'm not asking for help. So the answer is just keep on going and see what happens. And along with that thought, it was, you know, I might not wake up tomorrow, but or maybe something bad will happen. It'll get my attention. Well, that's exactly what happened. And, you know, I thank my higher power today. I didn't when it happened, but I'll just give you a quick description of what happened one day. That I'm going to call that gift of desperation. My wife went on a trip to New York, where she's originally from, for 3 or 4 days, and she left me at home. And all I did was get high. And she took an airplane. It was an airplane trip, so I had taken her to the airport, and it was my job to pick her up. So, come that day to pick her up, I hadn't slept for 3 days. And I said, let's go to the airport. Hopefully, I can make it. Got in the car, got to the airport, made it. I'll try to keep the story short. It's quite interesting, but I'll just hit the high points. I drove in the parking lot, and it was just before a flight was to have landed, and I go, God, I'm really tired. I need something to, you know, get me awake. So I parked the car, and I started using something. And I'm looking around. There's no cops anywhere. And I'm doing what I'm doing, and I look in my side mirror, and I see this guy in a cop uniform riding a Segway right behind my car. And he obviously been there a while, because he saw exactly what I was doing. He saw the glass pipe in my hand. And what did I do? Well, I was brilliant. I put the car in gear, and oh, by the way, it was a no parking zone. Put the car in gear, took off across the parking lot, throwing stuff out the window. Yeah, I'm sorry none of you have done that. It didn't work, never does. And all of a sudden, there's cop cars coming at me from all directions. And they had me out of the car, they had me on the ground, with their, you know, that thing where they put the knee on your neck. And they had everything ripped out of my car. They had my pockets emptied. In the meantime, while this was happening, they had asked me, I guess, you know, why I was there. And I said to pick up my wife, and they asked me her name or something, and they went and got her, found her in the airport. She comes walking out to the middle of the short-term parking at Dulles Airport. And there's my car and me on the ground. And she also, by the way, she had my daughter and my granddaughter with her. I'm on the ground. They ripped the stuff out of my pockets, and they go, wow. Well, the one drug that they threw out the window, that was the bad one. That was the felony. But I had a bottle in my pocket and some other stuff, and I counted it up. I had 6 different drugs on me. Not including the pooler of beer I had in the back seat, but, and I'm kind of looking at this like this really isn't me. I kind of looked at it from like above the scene, and I'm going, wow. But that's what I did every day. It was an awakening. I'm not saying I was ready for NA or rehab or anything at that moment. But it got my attention, and Of course, my wife then found out that what I was doing that she didn't know about. And I had to face that, and this time I faced it. But anyway, that was a moment. And, you know, that's the gift of desperation that I'm talking about was there, if I was, you know, willing to accept it. So obviously I had legal problems. There was courts and lawyers, and the lawyer advised me I better do something, like maybe rehab. You know, I'm sure she was concerned about my welfare, but she was concerned about winning the case, or not having me, you know, losing the case. And that's what that was about. So I managed to drag my butt into RMH Medical Center. I wasn't really that willing, but I thought maybe this was a chance. Maybe this was the chance that I could get clean. And I did what they said. It was an outpatient rehab. I was not willing to go to an inpatient rehab. I should have probably, but in hindsight, this did work for me. I did what they said. That's the first time I've taken any real advice or directions in a long time. And part of the rehab program was requirement was you have to attend NA meetings or we're going to fail you out of this program, which will not go good for you in court. So that upped my willingness a little bit more. But by that, you know, I had a couple of days clean before they told me I had to do that, and I was already feeling better. And I walked into the first NA meeting at the Wine Price Building in Harrisonburg, and like they say in our literature, we didn't arrive with brimming with willingness and love and honesty. I didn't have it either, but I was willing to walk in that room. And you know, I've been in Narcotics Anonymous ever since, but you know, I did get an introduction to a higher power in that meeting. I didn't realize it at the time, but I did feel a power in that room that was greater than me. I saw some people that had changed their life a little bit. Some of them were smiling, which, and you know, not using and smiling and laughing was not something I was used to seeing. I was hugged and welcomed, which I thought was very weird. And some of the people that were there in this audience tonight, they all gave me their phone number. I didn't really believe that these people really cared about me. They didn't know me. But, you know, I was wrong about that. They did. That first meeting I shared, probably a couple of sentences, because I felt like I had to say how the hell I got there, you know, to justify me sitting in that chair. Well, it was basically, you know, I got arrested and I'm in trouble and maybe I can stop using. Really, I didn't have to say anything, but I was welcomed. So there I am in NA, and I guess I'm a member then, because if you say you're a member, you are. And I managed to show up the next day. And the next day, I didn't have much to share. I didn't know what to say, but I was getting a good feeling from the people in those rooms. I didn't start taking all the suggestions right away. I still felt I was pretty unique. You know, I still had that feeling like when I was using that, you know, nothing bad is going to happen to me. I'm smarter than that. Well, I kind of had that same attitude at first in NA. Well, there's got to be a quicker way to do this. It's got to be a faster, easier way. I don't like hearing about this higher power. I don't like hearing about a sponsor. That means I got to tell somebody some stuff that I'm not comfortable with. Isn't there a faster, easier way? Well, I'm not stupid, but I don't give up easy either, but I did hang around the rooms long enough that there were some people that came into those rooms right when I did, and I watched what they shared, heard what they shared, and watched what they did. Like me, they didn't have a sponsor, they weren't working steps, and they all just disappeared, basically, every one of them. And I was still there, and I saw I saw that, and I had maybe, I don't know, 30 or 60 days clean then, and I was feeling so much better, and I did not want to lose that clean time. I had not been clean 1 or 2 days in 30 years. So I decided that maybe I should take those suggestions, and like as Billy shared, I did ask him to sponsor me. That was a little bit of surrender right there. That was a big surrender, really. And like he shared, we started working the 12 steps. I guess I could share a little bit about what steps mean to me. I won't spend a lot of time on it, but step one, I think the main thing I take from that right today anyway is I started to think about honesty, self-honesty, and I could see the unmanageability, of course, but honesty is the big thing I'm thinking about right now as I stand here. And I'd been to enough meetings before I started working the steps to hear all about honesty, and I've been trying to practice it. When I stopped lying, things started to get better in my life. When I stopped manipulating people and lying, the world even looked better to me. So even today, that is a big part of my program, is trying to practice some rigorous honesty, and that's what I kind of think about step one. And step two and three, I had a problem with that. I wasn't up for the higher power concept. I just didn't subscribe to it. I didn't have any background in any kind of spirituality or religion. So I had to work on it. I had to read the literature. I had to talk to my sponsor about it. And the door kind of opened when simple thing was said. Well, after you told me some of the stuff you've been through, how the hell do you think you made it to NA? Maybe there was something working in your life all this time. What about all those cars you wrecked? And, you know, why are you here? How did you ask me to sponsor you? Was that your will? Not really, it wasn't. So that opened the door for me to the concept of a higher power, and that is a huge part of my recovery today, which is a miracle, really, compared to what I thought when I first got here. So I made it, you know, I spent a lot of time on those two steps. And you need to spend a lot of time on those steps. To do step four, I had to. And step four was difficult, but I was able to see the patterns in my life. I was able to come to grips with some of the things I had done to others. I found out that I wasn't the victim most of the time that I thought I was. I found out that a lot of my resentments are unfounded. And I found out that I had a really weird perception of who I really was back in active addiction. I had this idea that I was an honest, caring, loving, giving, nice guy. That was not true. And I didn't see that until I worked that step. And I also got to see what my part in things are. And today, that's something I always go back to when I'm in a situation with another person, maybe a conflict. What is my part in this situation? It's something I always go back to. Steps six and seven, after I found out about my character defects, it gave me a way to work on them and told me that I didn't have to do it by myself. I'm still working on some of them. Some of them may never be removed, but I'm aware of them anyway. if you do all that work in step four, and you find out all that stuff about yourself, and you got to list it at all, and you decide that you're just going to ignore some of them, well, what's the friggin' point? That's the way I feel about that. I'm not perfect. I still got some to work on, but I know about them. How much?
10 minutes.
Wow. In step 8 and 9, first of all, I wanted to mention the word freedom that I in step 4 and 5, I found some freedom there. And in step 8 and 9, I got some more freedom. You know, the amends, I don't want to talk a lot about that, but the one that sticks in my mind is the amends to my parents. First of all, I am grateful that they were still there for me to make amends to. Not everybody gets that opportunity. Through most of my life, I've distanced myself from them, and I've done some stuff that wasn't nice. And I sat down with them one day and, you know, said, you know, I'm making some amends to you for the things that I did that were wrong. And I'm doing the best today. And I explained some of what Narcotics Anonymous thinks about amends, you know, indirect amends, being that I'm trying to live a better life today and not make those same mistakes. They were kind of shocked at that. They were just shocked at the whole thing. You know, what are you doing? What do you mean? And I'm going, what I did was wrong. I'm trying to make it better. And some, you know, a lot of this stuff, the only way I can make it better is to live differently today. And my father apologized to me for the way that he handled some things that we went through. And my mother said, we didn't make, you know, I don't know why you became this way. You know, we're great that you're doing like really better, but I just want to, you know, mention that, you know, we didn't cause this. And, you know, this, you know, I've heard about it running in the family and stuff like that. I go, it's not in our family. And I'm saying, you know, she was just totally wrong about that, but it was in the family. But and they were shocked when I said, it doesn't matter how I got like this. No, of course it wasn't your fault. But I found it, I had to sort of laugh, but no, it doesn't matter. I'm an addict. It doesn't matter how I got that way. Step 11 is a big one for me. It's something I practice on a daily basis. It's what I turn to when I don't know what to do. I can ask for my higher power's will for me. Sometimes it's not clear what that is, and sometimes I don't get any kind of an answer for a while. But if I stick with it, somehow it seems to seep into me, and I can find a way through whatever it is I'm dealing with. And it's huge today. From where I used to be in my thinking, this kind of reliance on a higher power is just a miracle, really. And it's like the biggest part of my program today. And just, you know, thinking about step 12, yeah. I did have a spiritual awakening. I had more than one, I believe. Completing the 12 steps was a spiritual awakening, for sure. I do try to carry the message to the addict that still suffers in any way that I can. I try to welcome people in meetings. I try to work with people that are new in the program. Sponsorship in other ways, and I'm trying to practice the principles in all of my affairs. I mean, we are not perfect. I am not perfect. I'm going to make mistakes. I have made mistakes, but I am trying to live by these spiritual principles. You know, when I think about, you know, after thinking about all the steps, the 12 steps. I think now, how did I get to where I am? Obviously, it was through working the 12 steps, but I can really simplify it today. Recovery is simpler for me today. So people that are new out there, yes, it does get easier, but it does take some time, and it takes a hell of a lot of work. But I see things in a simpler way today. When I look, kind of just reflect on the journey that I've had over the last almost 10 years, really, I showed up in a meeting. At the very beginning, all I could do was go to the meetings. I couldn't do anything more than that. I wasn't willing to go farther than that. I could go to the meetings and not use, no matter what. See how I got that in there? That's all I could do. I sat and I listened. And I went to the next meeting and I didn't use. And it wasn't easy at the beginning. Not using no matter what is not an easy thing to do. But it will work if you can hang in there. And it took time to get any kind of straight thinking back. I mean, it's not easy. So once I finally surrendered a little bit and got the sponsor, really what it boils down to after that, these are the suggestions I'm following. I'm going to meetings, I'm not using, and I got the sponsor. The rest of it will fall into place if I listen to take, if I just take directions from my sponsor. That means I'm going to work the 12 steps. I'm going to probably look at the traditions if I get through the 12 steps. And that's what I did. It's a simple program, if we can take directions. As I mentioned, the spiritual part of this program is huge for me. And I happened to, last week, I think it was last Saturday, I went to our Harrisonburg Step and Traditions meeting. And it happened to be step three, which, you know, I really loved today, which I was so scared of before today, I love it. We read out of the It Works How and Why, and some discussion follows. You know, I've read this step out of that book. I mean, when I was working that step, I bet I read that step out of that book 25 times because I just had a problem with it. Today, I don't have a problem with it. There was a sentence in that reading. It was on the last page of the third step in the It Works How and Why. And I happen to have one right here, and I'm going to read it. If I can see it. Just to close. I think this is a case where, you know, we read all this stuff and we don't realize something until one day we see it and it touches us. Now, this particular sentence I had highlighted and marked in pencil. I did not remember ever reading it. So I think this is kind of big. It was big for me when I read it. It's big for me today, and I'm just going to close with this. We have found that the spiritual path set forth in the 12 steps is the only way to recovery in Narcotics Anonymous. And I believe that. I'd just like to thank you. Thanks for letting me share, and I hope one of you guys got something out of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. I got a couple of announcements on the for the nature hike in the morning. Meet at the